Thank you.
May it please the court, James Brooks representing plaintiff and Byra Uhler. First of all, there's a small housekeeping matter. Issue number two framed in Byra Uhler's opening brief has been resolved, I believe, by the appeal and companion case. That's Appeal 2006-1582. That issue concerned whether claims 1 and 9 required insertion of what is called the insulating block down into the coolant cavities. And that issue has been resolved now, so we withdraw the appeal on that basis, leaving two issues essentially before the court today. One is whether Claim 20 should have been ruled on summary judgment non-infringed, and the other is whether the small Amgen container should have been ruled as non-infringing with respect to Claims 1 and 9. I'd like to start...
Which one is the small Amgen container?
Well, there are three containers involved, Your Honor.
And I'm trying to separate which one's the small one.
That is the, with all due respect, the smallest of the three containers that runs approximately, I believe, 7 inches by 4 inches. There's a container that's approximately 8 inches by 8 inches, and there's a container that's approximately 13 inches by 8 inches.
They have do they all have the same features as the exhibit that we had a chance to look at?
They're slightly different configurations with respect to the shape of the coolant cavity. The small container has a different sort of a cutout than the...
Is there a block extending from the top that reaches down into a cavity?
We believe there is, yes, Your Honor.
Where is that? Small engine containers at JA99, correct?
I believe so, Your Honor, yes. And we have some... We also have a JA 471 through 473 pictures of all three containers.
Please proceed.
Your Honor, I have a question pending.
Yes, you're trying to tell me how, by looking at JA 99, and the top of that container is on JA 100, right?
Yes, yes.
What extends down into the cavity from that top?
There's a large insulating block coming off the cover, Your Honor, that extends down into that cavity. We believe that cavity is defined
substantially by filling the air pockets left there.
Certainly with respect to claim one, a remaining space. Yes, that's true, Your Honor. It substantially fills because in conjunction with the coolant pack, the air can be substantially minimized inside that coolant cavity. I might add that when...
What you're saying is the block, is that what's a JA 101?
Yes.
In other words, the block is the area that has the, I guess it's six, and it's also a JA 102. The block, you'd say, is the area that has the six little rings on it?
Yes.
A JA 102.
I believe so. Yes. And
the tops that are shown in Appendix 101 and 102 are the tops that cooperate with the boxes that are shown in 99 and 100, or the containers of 99 and 100. Is that correct?
That is correct. Not cooperates with not only the boxes, but the coolant packs as well, Your Honor. And these coolant packs were never specified by Amgen in the original bid. They can be various sizes, and as we know from the record below, according to the testimony that was never refuted, when frozen, these packs expand. So measurements made from packs that are not frozen.
Much of your specification, though, talks about filling up the air cavity in the coolant. How could this top that you're showing us on JA 102 accomplish that purpose?
I believe in the reply...
It's almost flush with the top of the entire top itself, isn't it? It's not filling up any airspace that's left in that coolant.
When it depends on how you define the coolant cavity, Your Honor. What the court referred to is an open top. Others refer to as part of the coolant cavity because three of the four walls in a small container...
Well, in your figures, which you show us, the coolant cavity is is a very narrow rectangular slot which receives the coolant. And of course you have a block extending from the top of the cooler that it drops right down into and matches with that opening.
Yes.
Fills up any additional space above the coolant that's been inserted in that slot, right?
Well,
this seems to be very different from that. You're just covering the top of the cooler, not filling up airspace.
The coolant cavity in the small engine container, Your Honor, is defined by the three walls that extend around the back and the two sides of the cavity. And the specification itself makes it clear that the coolant cavities extend from the top of the container body itself down to the base. And that top is ringed, in fact, by three walls in the small Amgen container.
Mm-hmm.
And a fourth wall has a cutout.
Exactly.
If the top of the coolant container, as we believe it should be, is defined as the top of the shipping body in that instance, then that block that extends from the cover down into the area in the middle of the container does in fact insert inside that coolant cavity. That's the essence of our argument, Your Honor.
But is it substantially minimizing air spaces?
We believe there are gel packs that certainly could be the case with. This is a summary judgment proceeding, Your Honor. We believe that any determination that that can't be the case has to be a fact finding that's improper on a summary judgment in a summary judgment proceeding. So there is testimony that coolant packs expand. There's testimony, unrebutted testimony, that no specific coolant pack size was specified by Amgen, so that in fact there are coolant packs that can fit into there, that when the top is inserted in that block underneath the top that corresponds to the insulating block of the claim, goes down inside what should be defined as the cavity, the two in fact eliminate a substantial airspace above the coolant block. And as I say, this is a factual dispute, Your Honor. The judge decided your question on summary judgment. And that's one of the reasons why we're here before you. Again, not to be cute, Your Honor, but that's a major problem, as is the problem with Claim 20, which I'd like to address. So I think we clearly got a judicial finding of fact in the context of a summary judgment. There are two claim terms that are at issue with respect to Claim 20. Walls that substantially engage the product in the cavity and thereby substantially minimizing the airspace around the product. Now, the word substantially was defined by the court as largely but not necessarily wholly. It was not defined as defendants wished it to reduce to the smallest possible amount. It was defined as largely, not necessarily wholly. And when we get to substantially minimize, which I'll touch on in a minute, there not only do we have substantially, but we have the word minimize, which
but
doesn't mean.
Because of the cutouts here, isn't it going to be impossible for your cooler top to ever minimize the air spaces around the product? Haven't they designed around pretty effectively? They made a lot of airspace around the product. They're not taking themselves out of this substantially minimizing airspaces around the product limitation.
I don't believe so at all, Your Honor. If you look
at... Well, how do you get around it?
Well, the fact is, look for example, at JA 471 through 73, which shows these three containers, these small, medium, and large, packed with product. And I might add, this product was placed inside the product in accordance with conventional industry standard, about which there's a lot of testimony. These shipping containers are not made to, as the phraseology goes, ship air. They're made to ship product. In fact, there are even computer programs designed to help the packers of these shipping containers optimize the box configurations that go inside them. And when you optimize them, you get something such as shown here in JA 472, Your Honor. I'm holding that up. JA 472. You can see that container is practically filled. There are some small spaces around
the
box.
Top on,
you're still going to have substantial air spaces around the product due both to the cutouts and the larger coolant pocket, which is not completely filled by the coolant gel.
Well, the coolant pocket is not a part of the cavity that holds the product. That's what the claims require, Your Honor. Where the airspace is minimized for purposes of Claim 20 is the product cavity, not the coolant cavity. So we're not talking about whatever space may be left in the coolant cavity. We're only focused on the product cavity. I might also add that in Claim 20, we're not talking about covers. We're only talking about the four sidewalls and the bottom. In that instance, I put to you, there is substantial reduction of the airspace. That is a fact, Your Honor. That's a fact. It's a fact that the experts below on behalf of EnviroCooler testified to. They indicated that, based on their experience of design of packaging materials, what was done here was an attempt to minimize the airspace. And it was done slightly differently than in the preferred embodiment of the patent, but it was nonetheless done.
What the specification of this patent in column 4, lines 29 to 34, talks about the product cavity. It's the product cavity having a shape that allows the product, etc., etc., so as to substantially minimize airspace around the product.
Correct.
But it seems to me that the accused has a shape intended to do precisely the opposite. And namely, all of those ribs are intended to provide airspace, no matter how big the product is.
I agree those ribs are there intentionally, Your Honor, and there's an airspace there intentionally, but there's an airspace intentionally in Claim 20. That substantially minimizing airspace was written that way for a reason. And the reason is that in the real world, when these products are used, you've got to be able to insert the product boxes and take them back out. So, of necessity, you need some amount of airspace around that product. If you didn't need that airspace, the claim could have been written substantially eliminate or eliminating airspace, but that's not how it was written. It was written to substantially minimize the airspace, and I put it to the court, there was a reason for that. That reason was testified to below. That is a factual dispute. It is not the province of the court to make that decision. If we look at what the court said, actually, I think that illustrates my point as well, Your Honor. I'm reading from the court's summary judgment determination, JA18, where the court says, the ribs and the standoff pads guarantee a minimum quarter-inch layer of airspace around the product at all times. This cannot be said to substantially minimize airspace around the product. And there's a footnote. And it's the footnote of greatest interest here, Your Honor. The footnote says, although the court recognizes the potential line-drawing problem here, it need not consider whether smaller ribs and standoff pads would be sufficient to avoid infringement of this claim. For purposes of the containers at issue in this action, a quarter-inch airspace is enough. Well, Your Honor, I submit to you, that's judicial fact-finding on the part of the judge. That's the judge saying, well, I think this is enough. That's the judge saying, I'm not even going to take into account whether smaller ribs would work. And by the way, we have a tolerance problem here, Your Honor. The tolerance on this product is 1/8 inch in either direction. So this airspace around here, and it's not all the way around the product, it's only in between the ribs that we're talking about, could be as small as 1/8 inch. And the judge did not address that tolerance problem.
But sometimes save your rebuttal time, Mr. Corbett.
Yes, Your Honor.
Schwartz.
May it please the court.
We're talking here about the accused products and their dimensions. That's uniquely a question of fact, isn't it?
That's correct, and the district court didn't pay any attention to that. This was the district court's decision.
But doesn't he have to avoid that any fact finding in summary judgment?
And he did. What he did was pure claim construction. That's what this is about. What the district court said is that the patented device consists of a container body, a cover, and there's also packaging around it. That's irrelevant for the purpose of this. The container body has two distinct cavities, a coolant cavity for containing the coolant, product cavity for the product. They're separate. Above that, is what is referred to alternatively in the patent as either the open top or the open end. They're identical. It's figure 18 in the drawings. The cover is an insulated cover, has extensions protruding down from insulated protrusions. And what this court has already found is that the patent requires that those protrusions must invade, descend into the coolant cavity.
To meet the slidably engaging
one. Yes, and there's other language in both claims 1 and 9 that require it to descend into, because the coolant cavity must be filled by a combination of the coolant and the projection. And
the projection, we don't have any slidably engaging in 20, right?
That's correct. That only has to do with the cover. So what the district court said was claim construction. You've got two distinct cavities there. The patent in column 4, lines 24 to 27, starts off defining what the product cavity is. And that's the key. You start with product cavity. So it's J37. It says the insulated body has four sidewalls, a bottom wall, and an open top, defining a product cavity. That's key. The product cavity is defined three sides by the walls, you got the bottom, and then the top, the upper level of the product cavity, is defined by the open end, the open top. What that means is the space, what we're talking here is dividing empty space, whether it's a cavity, product cavity. What it says, the patent says, is the product cavity ends at the top of the wall, and that's the open end. That open end is the top of the product cavity. It's also the bottom level of the open end, and that extends across the entire container. Then you go on to define what is the coolant cavity, and the coolant cavity is defined.
So how do you accommodate the cutouts in those definitions?
If there were cutouts in claims 1 and 9, but there aren't. The cutouts only in...
No, they're in the accused devices. The walls
right.
are cut out, and so there's a recess there in what would otherwise be the top of the product container.
Well, actually, the product cavity goes up to, if you look on, I guess it was J.A. Plunder? J.A., yes, it is 100, or 99. 99 is a clearer picture. Okay. On the uppermost wall, that wall, which is, doesn't go all the way to the top of the container, is the top, is the wall of the product cavity. There are four walls around that product, two of which are higher than the other two. They are cutouts. The product cavity goes to the top of the tallest of those walls, and that's where the open top, the open end starts. And there's a plane that goes across the whole container. That's where the open top begins. It's also where the product cavity ends. It's also where the coolant cavity ends, because the coolant cavity is defined as extending downward from the open top. And that's what the district court said. You have two distinct cavities, the product cavity and the coolant cavity, and above them a shared space. That's the open end and open top.
Are you saying that each of these cavities has to have four walls, four side walls? And it's the that it's not enough to have three walls around the cavity. You have to have four walls around the cavity, and that's why for the coolant cavity, the top of the cavity stops at the top of the shortest wall.
It stops at the highest wall of the product cavity, because the product cavity is defined as the uppermost boundary of the product cavity is the beginning of the open end. And that open end is just space, just like the cavity is just space. And that open end, that boundary of the product cavity, defines not only the product cavity, it defines the tops boundary of the cooling cavity. Everything above that is shared open space. You then put the cover on, and the cover goes into the open space. It doesn't go, certainly can't go below, and no one argues that it does, go below the product cavity, the uppermost wall in the product cavity. It stops above that. It fills space in the open end, the open top. Doesn't go into the product cavity, doesn't go into the cooling cavity, because it doesn't go lower than the product cavity.
When the lid is put on,
yes.
It rests on the larger end pieces of the product cavity, correct?
Correct.
So that there is shared, there's an open space from one side of the container over to the other side of the container, and that open space encompasses the first coolant cavity, the product cavity, and then the second coolant cavity, correct?
It goes over all three, yes. Yes, and that space is the shared open space, the open end, the top. The cover does descend into the open top, doesn't go down below that. And you say, well, why can't the cooling cavity go higher and you just pile in the coolant? Because if you did, if the cooling cavity went higher than the product cavity, coolant, like dry ice chips, could just fall into the product cavity. Or if you have a tall frozen coolant, as EnviroCooler's attorney was saying, it could tip because there's no wall, there's a cutout, and it would touch the product. And that would be exactly against the teaching of the patent. If you look at JA36.
Where does the patent require that the top extend down into the product cavity?
Oh, it doesn't. It never mentions going into the product cavity. It talks about going into the coolant cavity. And this doesn't go into the coolant cavity. It goes into the open end.
You're saying that the accused products, that there's no disputed fact that the accused products do not substantially minimize air spaces around the product.
That's true because, well, it doesn't do that because it doesn't do that at all, but it doesn't do it in conjunction with anything from the cover because the cover does not invade the coolant cavity.
That substantially minimizing airspace requirement, in your view, is not met when the lid is on for two reasons. One, because of the ribs that are around the product cavity.
That's true.
And two, because of the airspace that is above all three cavities. Is that your...
No, I would say the airspace isn't minimized because of the ribs, because of those pads on both the bottom of the cavity and on the lid, but it's also, in claims 1 and 9, the reduction has to be a combination of the projection from the cover and the coolant. The projection from the cover never goes into the coolant cavity. And that was the basis for the court's affirming the lower case.
That's 1 and 9. We're looking at 20.
Okay, 20.
That's the problem.
Okay, 20 is another one. 20 also has nothing to do with fact. The judge didn't resolve fact. He did claim construction. Contrary to what EnviroCooler's attorney said, there actually are three phrases that have to be interpreted in claim 20. The claim says, in operant part, we're looking at claim 16. 20 depends on
yes.
16. Okay, 16. An insulated body having a plurality of walls defining a product cavity, obviously. But then, the plurality of walls, and here's the first phrase that has to be construed, being adapted to. Second phrase, substantially engage a product in the product cavity. Third, substantially minimizing airspace. EnviroCooler's attorney conveniently avoids the adapted to language. Most cases do. Patent prosecutors throw that adapted to language in there to avoid means plus function clauses. And they try to say it doesn't mean anything. But in this case, it does. Adapted to means, if you look in the dictionary, modify, meant to conform, meant to fit, meant to fit. It has a meaning. You can't ignore that. In this case, this container was meant to have product walls that held the product securely. And how did it do that? It also minimized the airspace it's about. You know, patent terms are supposed to have meaning so that people who read it know how to, what to avoid.
Well, we still have Mr. Brooks's argument.
Mm-hmm.
I have not heard you address yet.
Okay.
That is, he says there is some minimization of the air spaces around the product. When you put the top down, it does enter. And therefore, didn't the district court engage in fact-finding when it said, although there's minimizing, I'm going to say as a matter of law, it's not substantial minimization.
Okay. First, Claim 20, Claim 16 don't have to do with the top, the cover. It's just, that's Claims 1 and 9. But Claim 20 and 16 don't have to do with the cover. What the district court said was, I'm going to assume that this container secures a product. Well, if you assume that it secures, when this was, everyone, it's uncontested, this was constructed with the specific objective not to secure the product. If you're going to ignore the words adapted to, say, that doesn't have any meaning, and you say, well, it's capable of securing it, even though this doesn't. So that doesn't have
any meaning. The trouble with your argument there is it may be adapted to fit some products and not others, and we're back into fact-finding, aren't we?
No.
If you get a product that fits right into the cavity, it is adapted to fit it.
But in this particular case, this was...
And so you had infringement in some instances and not in other instances, and that would require fact-finding to determine. How do you get around that?
I think that if you say that you could always find something to fit, the words have no meaning. If this was star-shaped and you put a rectangular box in the middle, would it fit? No, but you could find a block, that a box that was star-shaped and stick it in. Yeah, you could always find
it. You have infringement, exactly.
Right.
Fact-finding.
But that's not the case here. They're saying this was a product made specifically offered. It was never sold. It was an offer from a specific request by Amgen for one specific size product. This wasn't for anything else. You can always find stuff to shove in, cram in, and fill any opening. That's what they've done. What the district court said was, I'm going to assume it's capable of holding. If you do that, you ignore the meaning of the words. But then they said is, but when you have these ribs on there, and you have the little plates on the bottom and on the cover that descend in that maintain space, as a matter of law, that doesn't minimize airspace. He talked about tolerances. Yeah, if there's an eighth of an inch tolerance, it would have to be an eighth of an inch off of the rib in addition to the space. It wouldn't go with in between the ribs. The ribs and the pads below and above maintain airspace. That's not minimizing airspace.
Mr. Schwartz, when we're deciding whether summary judgment of non-infringement was properly granted with respect to claim 20, which ends from 16, is it the case that we have to look at simply your container, but not your container with your top, your cover on? I'm trying to... Because earlier when I asked you the question about what about the space that would be common to all three places, do we just look at the container without the top on it, engaging whether there's been proper summary judgment of non-infringement for claim 20?
I think you don't look at the top per se, but you look to see if the configuration of the accused device minimizes the airspace all the way around the product.
The accused device being the container absent the cover.
No, the accused device has a cover.
No, but it's claim 16 and 20, there's no cover.
That's true, but it does talk about minimizing the airspace around.
Oh, no, I agree. But in other words, we have to look at whether there is a minimizing of airspace in the absence of a cover. because...
I think that's probably correct.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Schwartz?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Brooks.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of brief points. First of all, in answer to the question you posed to Colchin's counsel, the district court did look to dimensions here in deciding its summary judgment motion. It looked to the quarter-inch space around the packaging inside the product cavity. It didn't. What it didn't do, though, in making a blanket determination of infringement, is gauge what that quarter-inch meant relative to all three container sizes. We've got containers that move from 4x7 all the way up to 8x13. The cubic inch differential there is almost four times. And there was no determination or attempt made to figure out whether an eighth of an inch in a small container was not substantial, didn't create substantial minimizing, but might have in a larger container. And that just points out the larger problem here is that there was, in fact, fact finding. That's what the district court did. I want to add two other quick points. Again, we're minimizing air spaces here. Minimizing them, not eliminating airspace. That's a purposeful thing to do, to minimize the airspace. And as I indicated in my earlier argument, Your Honors, the reason for doing that is it's industry standard to leave a little bit of space around any product packaging inside a product cavity so that you can pull product out. That's understood. There was testimony on the record that that's industry standard. And speaking of industry standard, I'd like to close with my last point, Your Honors. That is that this issue of what substantially minimizing means really is an expert issue. What is substantial? It's how it would be understood in the industry. The court concluded, in its view, that there was not substantial minimizing. If we analogize to cases such as the Verb case, quoted on page 10 and 11 of our reply brief, Your Honors, that case, in talking about whether the word substantial is indefinite or not, which is a corollary here that wasn't raised down below, indicates that it's well established when the term substantially serves reasonably to describe the subject matter so that its meaning and scope would be understood by persons in the field of the invention, it is not indefinite. And I put to you the analogy here is overwhelming. We have an expert down below who has designed these kind of cases that took a look at the bid containers from Colchain and said, in my opinion, what happened here was a substantial minimization of airspace. It was an attempt to substantially minimize. And I think if Your Honors go back and look at JA 471 through 473, you'll see the visual evidence is rather overpowering of that.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
Thank you.
I think your time has expired.